Mostly I just like laughing like a child.
And as a fan of humour yourself, humour in writing, Monty Python, Spike Milligan, how much room is there for humour, for comedy, in the kind of work you do?
Well, there wasn't a lot of room for anything else for the first 15 years of what we did. We had a problem because we did so many different types of music. We had no brand. And then in about 1998 or so, we started doing magical comedy, which is a very a tiny little genre of pieces from the 1590s to 1610. And we got very famous doing those, except that no one really wanted to know. And then the full Monteverdi came along, and then Talis in Wonderland, and then the contemporary opera you mentioned, the Birds. But I think if you ever came to rehearsal, we spend most of it giggling like children. And I know we're very, very serious musicians, but there always seems to be, there seems to be behind any serious project, I don't know if Kenneth thinks this, behind any very serious piece of drama, an awful lot of laughter in rehearsal, and exactly the opposite with comedy. The masked show we did, the Venetian show we did from 1590s, it was intensely serious process, trying to get to use these masks and trying to get the timing absolutely spot on. Wasn't much giggling in that.
Thanks very much to Robert Hollingworth and Kenneth Cranham. Don't forget Robert's prom on August the 27th, and as you listen to it, try to picture him reading Monty, My Part in His Victory, and it will add a layer or two to your delight. Thank you very much.
Well, I'll certainly be listening. Ian McMillan was talking to Robert Hollingworth. The extracts were read by Kenneth Cranham, and the producer was Georgia Mann. And welcome back to tonight's prom, which is being given by the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra and Chorus under their music director, Andris Nelsons. In 45 minutes or so, the searing orchestral climax of Richard Strauss's opera, Zalome, where Zalome herself teases King Herod by shedding her seven veils. But before that, music that Sergei Prokofiev fashioned from the score that he had written for Sergei Eisenstein's 1938 film Alexander Nevsky, about the 13th century prince who conquered Russia's enemies. This was Prokofiev's third film score, and he himself was heavily involved, not just in the composition process, but in the recording as well. He employed different sections of the orchestra, as well as different compositional styles, to help focus precisely the right sort of imagery. For example, the Teutonic Knights, Nevsky's adversaries, are represented by heavy discordant brass instruments playing in a conspicuously martial style. By contrast, the Russian forces are rather more sympathetically represented, using, for example, brighter, folk-like material. Prokofiev's cantata is cast in seven varied movements. First, we confront the purely orchestral prelude, Russia under the Mongolian yoke, which is designed to evoke an image of Russia's destruction by the invading Mongols. Then comes the choral song about Alexander Nevsky, which marks Prince Alexander's victory over the Swedish army at the Battle of the Neva in 1240. Hence, Alexander received the name Nevsky. The next section, the Crusaders of Pskov, Prokofiev's original intention was to use some genuine 13th century church music, but he thought better of it, though the words he used from the Psalms, specifically from the Vulgate, are the ones that his arch-rival Stravinsky chose for his Symphony of Psalms. Well, it's inevitable that the Crusaders should inspire a call to arms from the Russian people, which they certainly do with a rousing chorus. But it's the fifth movement, the Battle on Ice, which vividly suggests the final clash between Nevsky's forces and the Teutonic Knights on the frozen surface of Lake Peipus on Russia's border with the Baltic states, where Prokofiev really shows his genius with a wide variety of tempos, rhythms and orchestral colours. The battle over, the mood becomes desolate as a lone girl seeks her lost lover and kisses the eyelids of all the dead in a solo for mezzo-soprano, Nadezhda Savdyuk here. But ultimately, a sense of optimism reigns when the chorus and orchestra heroically proclaim Alexander's triumphant return to Pskov. While the cantata that grew out of the Nevsky film, followed fairly quickly after the original and was premiered in Moscow on the 17th of May 1939. As with the film, it went down a storm with the public. The American premiere followed 4 years later under the direction of that ever innovative maestro, Leopold Stokowski.
And it's since become incredibly popular on disc too. There have been wonderful recordings by Karel Anschel, Andrei Previn, Svetlanov, loads of wonderful recordings. Eduardo Martas, one of my own favourites, from Dallas. And if you want to show off your hi-fi system, it's certainly a piece to do it. Well, that applause for the mezzo-soprano Nadezhda Serdyuk and the conductor Andres Nelsons, who together with the City of Birmingham Symphony Chorus and Orchestra perform Prokofiev's cantata Alexander Nevsky, starting with Russia under the Mongolian yoke.
Thank you.
a film classic turned cantata, Alexander Nevsky by Prokofiev. There we heard Nadezhda Savdyuk with the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra and the City of Birmingham Symphony Chorus, conducted by Andris Nelsons, who's proudly signalling to everyone in that remarkably exciting performance. My goodness, the percussion certainly went for it, and so of course did the chorus. The Battle on Ice, the shouts, I don't think I've ever heard them so loud, either on a disc or live. In fact, I think the last time I heard this work live was at the South Bank with Carl Davis conducting it against the backdrop of the original film, and that was an interesting experience. Also, as a matter of interest, the Battle on Ice, it's maybe not quite as original as people think. There's a work by Tchaikovsky, his Concert Fantasy for piano and orchestra. And when you get that wonderful music of the Crusaders, and then the fast folk music comes through it, there's a passage in the Concert Fantasy that's exactly the same as that. Well, that's extra applause for Simon Halsey, who is the conductor of the chorus. And he, of course, is applauding them as well. And Nadezhda Savdyuk takes an extra bow. Beautifully sung, that moving elegy for the dead. And the chorus rises again. Of course, this is the ideal location for a work like this. The music really expands, it has room to breathe in the vast acoustic. Everybody standing now. A lot of very happy faces. I hope at the prom sometimes they do the cantata for the 40th anniversary of the October Revolution, which is another stunning piece by Prokofiev. And Seven They Are Seven, they'd make a nice programme together. I think I might suggest it. Well, Andris Nelsons may be only 32, but his relationship with the Proms goes back a long way, and he relishes appearing here.
A prom is, I always felt, as a member of audience, it's a special place. I think this is probably the warmest atmosphere I've felt somehow. It's, you know, it's such a huge amount of people. You would think, oh, it would be a bit like in a big stadium, you know, would have a feeling of too much energy. You know, too much adrenaline from, you know, it's like in football match, but it's really not like that. It's so intimate there, you know, it's such a silence, such a tension, which is incredible. And then me as a member of audience, when I was many years ago at proms, listening to many concerts, I remember each summer, it was an extreme like experience to stay in that line to queue for the tickets and then to be in the hall to experience all these great conductors and orchestras, and now to perform, it's even more amazing feeling. So the warmth which comes from the audience is very special as well. You feel these people who are standing, I think, oh my God, they have to stand so long. But you know, it's such a attention and such a knowledgeable feeling, I must say, from the audience as well.
Such modesty. Andris Nelsons, music director of the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra. Now, after the battle and the triumph of Prokofiev's Alexander Nevsky, they and their prom with a lurid tale of sex and manipulation and a work of genius by Richard Strauss that, in operatic terms, is about as close to an orchestral showpiece as you're ever likely to get. It's his opera Zalome, based on a play by Oscar Wilde and best known for two episodes, the final scene where Zalome declares her love to the severed head of John the Baptist and the Dance of the Seven Veils that precedes it, which we'll hear in a moment or two. As to the events on stage, Herod has asked for Zalome to eat and drink with him, but she indolently refuses. Herod then begs her to dance for him, though her mother objects. He then promises to reward her with her heart's desire, even if it were one half of his own kingdom.
So, after Zalame inquires into his promise, and he swears to honour it, she prepares for her Dance of the Seven Veils, where, to the most sinuous and suggestive music imaginable, she slowly removes her veils until she lies tantalisingly naked at his feet. Then Zalame shockingly demands the head of the prophet, John the Baptist, on a silver platter. Well, here it is now, the Dance of the Seven Veils from Zalame.
And they're off, the lot, the Seven Veils, the Dance of the Seven Veils from Salome by Richard Strauss, the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Andres Nelsons. Well, it's pretty hot in the hall tonight, but the temperature just went up a few degrees with that music. Still unbelievable. Doesn't matter how many times you hear it, it has that drive, that enormous erotic power. And in context in the opera, it's overwhelming. I must say the orchestra has really excelled tonight. The solo departments, of course, as well, the section leaders have been remarkable. Andres Nelsons now returning. He looks delighted. And he's cueing people to stand up. Nobody will stand up at the moment. No, no, they won't. Oh, yes. Just have the flute. Now the clarinet. Robert Pickup. Solo horn. Elspeth Dutch. Trumpet. Jonathan Holland. We have tuba, Graham Sibley. Celeste, Ben Dawson. Percussion, well, fantastic. The whole orchestra. That performance of the dance, pretty wonderful. Terrific tempo at the end as well. Well, there's lots about the Proms, of course, on Radio 3, the Breakfast and In Tune, the Daily Proms podcast. You can see the Proms website for details. There's the weekly competition for free Proms tickets, composer of the week at noon and at 6:30 every day, featuring several Proms-related composers throughout the season. Classical collection at 10 every weekday, features a prom-related artist of the week, every week. This week, it's Gustavo Dudamel. Then there's a completely new proms website this year for you to enjoy. You can listen live in HD sound via the proms website. Catch up with every radio and TV broadcast. Andres Nelsons is back again. And he's thanking the arena in particular. Always must be wonderful to have those people behind you. He mounts the platform, the podium, bows. Oh, what can I tell you that you can't hear yourself? And blows kisses to everyone. He's obviously totally elated. and the orchestra stands yet again. Well, tomorrow's prom is an all Rachmaninoff programme of the BBC Philharmonic and the chorus of the Mariinsky Theatre and Gianandrea Noseda. And the second chance to hear this one is tomorrow as well. That's on Afternoon on 3 at 2 p.m. That's on Tuesday. Also, listen again, and there are other online features that I've already spoken about. Go to the Radio 3 website. Now, though, I pass you back to my trusted colleague, Jonathan Swain, at Broadcasting House.
Rob, thank you very much. Rob Cowan there at the Royal Albert Hall. And with that sensational Don Juan at the start, I wonder if the CBSO and Andrus Nelson's aren't better at Richard Strauss than just about anything else. Anyway, as Rob was saying, there's another chance to hear tonight's prom on Tuesday afternoon here on BBC Radio 3 at 2 o'clock. Well, our next scheduled programme this evening is in just over a quarter of an hour. Sounds of the 70s. Record collector and DJ Johnny Trunk creates a new work made entirely of BBC sound effects records from the 1970s. So an unlikely sonic adventure into the lost world of Geiger counters, Routemaster buses, typewriters, vintage bells and windscreen wipers, all extracted, from the original 7-inch vinyl pressings of recordings made between 1970 and 1979. That's Sounds of the 70s at 10 past 10 this evening. And then from 10:30 until 1 a.m, we're at Charlton Park in Wiltshire for WOMAD Live 2011. For the moment, some French music, a caprice on Danish and Russian airs by Saint-Saëns. It's from 1887. He'd just agreed to conduct some concerts in Russia in the company of a flautist, an oboist and a clarinetist. And he wrote this caprice to show off his skills as a pianist alongside theirs. The players are Catherine Quentin, flute, Maurice Bourg, oboe, Michel Portal, clarinet. And the pianist is Pascal Roger. The Caprice on Danish and Russian Airs by Saint-Saëns. The players there, Catherine Quentin, flute, Maurice Bourg, oboe, Michel Portal, clarinet, and the pianist was Pascal Roger. Well, to follow it, Saint-Saëns for solo piano, a prelude and fugue from his Opus 52 Etudes. The prelude in particular is fiendishly difficult to play. Taking up the challenge here is pianist Piers Lane. Saint-Saëns, the prelude and fugue in F minor from his Opus 52, Six Etudes. The pianist was Piers Lane. You're listening to BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio, and you can also listen to us live online. It's now 10 past 10 and time for Between the Ears, which tonight is a composition made entirely out of BBC sound effects recorded in the 1970s. Its creator is the DJ and record collector Johnny Trunk.
The idea of creating a mix out of BBC sound effects records really came from the fact that I collect BBC sound effects records. Not the big 12-inch ones with the funny pictures of cabbages and Doctor Who on the front, but the little 7-inch 33 RPM ones with red or purple labels that come in these special BBC plastic sleeves that you see for sale in charity shops sometimes, or in boot fairs, or sometimes on the internet. And over the years, when I've seen them for sale and liked the title, say it says something like goats on it, I'll have bought it, and you sit at home and you listen to a 33 RPM 7-inch of goats, and on the B side it'll be goat, so you'll have plural goats on one side and singular goat on the other, and they're almost infinite in their variety and strangeness. So when the BBC approached me, I thought, do you know what, I think it'd be quite a good idea to get the whole batch of these little records, all of them in fact, and do a mix. So when the BBC said yes, I immediately then realised I'd have to give it a bit more focus, because there are thousands of these sound effects recordings. So for me, I went straight for the nostalgic route and thought, well, the sounds of the 70s is sort of when I grew up, so it would be interesting for me to re-listen back to some of those lost noises, and immediately start digging up sound effects like parking meters. And I remember parking meters, where you put the money in and they make this sort of funny mechanical windy noise, and noises like that, and also the bells from old fire engines and old car indicators, things like that, things, noises that are gone but are sort of deep within my own mind somewhere. And I think playing with the sound effects would sort of bring them to the surface a little bit and maybe confuse and disorientate slightly, which I think is a interesting thing to do with sound. But I sat down and thought, well, how am I going to structure this long mix? It has to have some kind of narrative. So I originally started thinking, well, here's a man rowing a boat, so we'll put the man in the boat and maybe it'll start raining, and then when the rain comes, maybe he'll stop rowing and then he'll get out and walk along the mud, and the sound effects with that, and you can sort of build a picture story. But very quickly I found that quite tedious, and I sort of scrapped the three or four mixes I'd done, and then sort of went back to it in a musical way and started using the noises and the sound effects as, I suppose, little pieces of an orchestra, and juxtaposing them in certain ways where they sort of went and sometimes didn't go at all, and creating sometimes third or fourth effects as a result of mixing them together. By way of punctuation, I started using this peculiar portcullis. I don't know where it comes from. I know it comes from the 70s, but I don't know which castle or which building the portcullis is or was, but it's this sort of stony, clumpy noise, but it's definitely a start or an ending to something. And every time you hear that, the narrative changes slightly, sometimes from outdoors to indoors, sometimes from wet to dry.
12, sir. Thank you, Mr. Pardes. Anything else for you?
Can I buy a few cheap artichokes or reasonable artichokes?
Certainly. 28 over the back there, buddy. Thank you.
was Sounds of the 70s. Tonight's Between the Ears, a composition for radio by Johnny Trunk, created entirely out of BBC Sound Effects records issued between 1970 and 1979. The programme was first broadcast last December. This is BBC Radio 3. It's a little after 10:30. And now we continue our weekend of live broadcasts from the 2011 WOMAD Festival. So let's go over to the festival site in Charlton Park in Wiltshire and join Andrew McGregor.
Thanks, Jonathan. Yes, welcome back. Or if this is your first visit this year, what kept you? We're here till 1 a.m. with highlights, live music and special guests. And they don't get bigger than the man on the main open-air stage right now, Senegal's Baba Mal.
Wamad, how are you feeling today? Do you feel all right? If you feel all right, I want to see your hands up. Oh, so beautiful. Yes, you can dance if you want. Africa, and the demi jara, Africa, jara my Africa, Africa, ni ma yara bile, Africa. Conakiri, lambe malasole, Conakiri, Conakiri, badalai, Conakiri, Conakiri, ni mayarabili, nesalala. So, how do you feel about Rome? Yes. Cha 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 c
Jarabi. Baba Mal there, one of the great African voices and in so many ways a spokesman for the continent. He's live on stage here at WOMAD and we'll be returning to hear much, much more in just a moment. Also in tonight's programme, Dub Colossus, live on our very own Radio 3 stage where it's been a stunning day. Ethiopian jazz meets Jamaican dub from them. Earlier this evening we heard Argentina's Axel Krieger. He joins me to try to explain what exactly he does on stage, a crazy mashup of samples, live performance, multi-instrumental skills, wild dance action, and a nativity theme. If you like Portuguese Fado, those heartbreaking torch songs made famous by Amália Rodrigues and more recently Marisa, then don't miss Ana Moura, who drops by to talk me through her music and the gorgeous set she performed this afternoon. And there's one of our live truck stop sessions, two Japanese musicians who play the shamisen lute, Etsuro Ono and Shunsuke Kimura, spellbinding virtuosity, plus Moroccan Berber music with a UK twist, Hassan Eraji's Moroccan Rollers. Do you see what he did there? And if there's time, Palestinian oud players Trio Jubran, live and late night from the Siam tent. But back right now to Baba Mal, live on the open-air stage. Marianne Kennedy talked to Baba Mal earlier this evening, and she's stage-side right now. So, Marianne, I can't see the crowd, but I can imagine for myself how big it is and just how excited they are about what's happening on stage. Go on, make me as envious as you can.
I tell you, Andrew, really, it is quite a privilege, and you'd think that because it was the open-air stage, there would be maybe something less of an atmosphere than in the tents, but it couldn't be further from the truth. You're actually seeing the entire WOMAD site here, and there's something very, very strange going on, something sort of slightly enchanted. As you go beyond the sphere of the stage, you see far down to the steam fair at the far end, and the puggies just sort of spinning gently, the banners all over the site just fluttering away skywards, and then drawing you further and further in, the smells of all the amazing food that are sitting in the various avenues going down through the site, and closer, food of course being a very important part of WOMAD, and I tell you, those Japanese guys make fantastic soup. I had some of that this afternoon. But anyway, back to tonight, and we're in the open air arena, and honestly, sitting side stage, you just kind of get half a notion of what it must be like for Baba Mal and his band to be out there looking at a sea of heads. As far as you can see, there's just people there for the music, there for Baba Mal, and it truly is something very special. Of course, in terms of world music, Baba Mal is really one of the kings of WOMAD. He's a regular visitor, and tonight's set, it features a lot of the songs that he's been singing over the years that will have graced WOMAD stages over those years. Now, Baba and myself, we've talked a couple of times over the past few months, and on each occasion, the influence that the positive force of music can have was a big talking point. So I suggested to him then that WOMAD was a kind of a perfect stage for him.
I love WOMAD Festival. I have been playing in WOMAD since a long time. And every time I come, it's like a new time. I get very excited about the people, because it's a very special festival. I went to WOMAD Abu Dhabi, it was the same. I went to Australia, Adelaide, it was the same, and I love it here in England also.
Do you change the act at all depending on where you are in the world, or is it always just you?
You know, I think I'm very lucky in the fact that the traveling gave me the chance to be connected to a lot of people. Today, here in WOMAD, I'm with the people I did work on my latest album, Television, some of them. And I have so many connections with people, younger musicians all over the world. So I pick up some of them here in London. Also, he was rehearsing all the time. And I want to give them the chance to jump on the stage with someone like me and to face the public of WOMAD. And I think it's going to be very exciting, because I love the challenge. I love the challenge. So I don't want to be doing all the time the same thing. But I will perform some of the song from Bio, from Jamlele, from Fighting in Futa, and then the last album, Television. It will be a kind of a journey.
Sure, you're here as a musician, and you're loving the vibe, and you're loving the music, and you're loving the songs.
But and the food?
And the food. There's so much food. So much food, so little time.
I just had the curry goat, which did really taste very well.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Also, coming back to this idea of how important it is for music to act as a healing agent and to act as a creating a positive future for Africa, does that figure when you're playing somewhere fairly neutral like WOMAD?
Yeah, of course, because in places like WOMAD, I feel that people come for the music. They come also because of the community. I can't feel that it's a kind of a group of people who feel the same thing, who wish the same thing, who come here and enjoy also the same kind of music that talks about the same kind of things that are really interesting for the world. But I guess after they, when they go back home, whatever they pick up here from the one who's singing from Egypt or the one who's coming from Asia, they will understand that something is going on the world, and they can projected where whatever they do, they can be a link between what we are talking about, where we come from, and what people can do to help us to achieve what we want to achieve in the life. Yeah.
Baba Mal, we're so happy that you're back here at WOMAD. Have a fantastic time.
Thank you very much. Pleasure.
Dunia komere kwenjira bini kosoe na yetema a dunia kobelelje yima. Yeah.